This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, and today I am finally joined by my colleague Trags. And Trags, we've been trying to get you on the podcast for a long time now. I'm very excited. All of our conversations that we have during games when we're sitting next to each other can now come in podcast form on Pat's All 22.
I love it because I'm finally able to return the favor for having you on my Patriots Beat podcast. Low those many times throughout the summer, fall, and now as we head into winter season as the Patriots get ready for another playoff run. I'm ready to do this. I'm pretty excited about a game that I think is going to be fascinating to break down. I'm not always amped up about a game going into that game in terms of breaking down the talent, but I think the Patriots defense against the Cowboys offense is a fascinating matchup to break down.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just talking about how it's strength on strength this week with the number one DVOA rated defense versus the number one DVOA rated offense in the Cowboys. And we're going to talk about the Cowboys. We're going to talk about Isaiah Wynn, talk about the Patriots issues on offense. But I do want to paint the picture for people for a second here of what it's like for to be with me and Trags in the press box during a Patriots game. Because we sit next to each other for every single game. Usually my brain is going 1,000 miles an hour, and Trags just perfectly points out all of the little things that I don't notice about a game, like the referees, for example, or something else that kind of just happens that he sees from all of his experience that as I'm trying to figure out schemes and what's going on, sometimes it's always great to have somebody that kind of takes a step back. We also argue a decent amount, I would say. We don't always agree on every little thing.
Yeah, and I think it's healthy to have that debate back and forth and not always. I mean, it gets boring if we both see the game the same way. What benefit is that? Is there in that, right?
Right. I think it's a huge benefit, honestly, for me to have you there because we do see the game in a similar way, I would say, but in still different with our own perspective. So having another perspective always next to me to kind of point out other things that maybe I'm not noticing is always really awesome and just great to have somebody to bounce the ideas off of. And also, of course, we make plenty of fun of Alex Barth, which is, you know, just awesome time as well, of course.
That's a layup. I mean, to use another analogy from or metaphor from another sport, it's just too easy just to make fun of poor Alex. But he is one of the hardest working guys I know. So I appreciate everything Alex brings to the table. And he knows that we both feel that way about him. That's the important thing.
Right, and we absolutely love him. Alex is a very passionate viewer of the game, I would say. Not that we all aren't, but he gets very much into it and has all of his screens up. He's got a tablet, and he's got his computer, and he's looking on the box score and tweeting and doing all sorts of stuff. So it's quite the team. And, of course, we have Sierra there, too, as well. And it's quite the foursome that we got going on at all these games. And it's a lot of fun and an honor to be a part of. But let's talk about some football. And the big news, I think, for this week with the Patriots is that Isaiah Wynn, left tackle, of course, first-round pick in 2018, was activated off of injured reserve on Tuesday. I think a little bit of a different situation than the N'Keal Harry activation where they activate him a little bit late and then they had him sit a game. I really think that Isaiah Wynn is going to be starting from the get-go here on Sunday against Dallas, and his activation early on in the week on Tuesday kind of signals that to me.
Oh, there's no question, and I don't think, given the way Marshall Newhouse has been playing, they had any other choice but to throw Isaiah Wynn into that mix. And, you know, I said this to a couple of other people when talking about whether or not too much pressure is being placed on the first round pick in 2018. And my answer to that is nobody knows their personnel better than the Patriots. And I've never seen an NFL team really self-evaluate and self-scout any better than the Patriots. And I don't think they would put Isaiah Wynn in this position if they didn't genuinely feel that they that he could handle it. I think they certainly would bring in some other people, and I know they have tried to do that early in the season. You know, there were certain players that didn't work out, but I just don't think they would put all of this on Isaiah Wynn if they didn't think he could handle it. And, you know, is he going to stand up? That's the biggest question I think anybody coming into this game and for the final seven games of 2019 is going to wonder, can Isaiah Wynn, his body, stand up to the beating that it's going to take when you're trying to stand up the best edge rushers in the National Football League, starting with what he's going to be facing this week in Michael Bennett and DeMarcus Lawrence and the Cowboys.
Yeah, you got Lawrence, you got Bennett, you got Robert Quinn. They do have a decent front there in Dallas that Wynn is going to have to face right away. I think the good news is for Patriots and Patriots fans is that just going back to training camp, as soon as Isaiah Wynn got onto the field and was basically a full go, because they did ease him into things in camp coming off of that Achilles, it was very apparent from the beginning that he can really, really play.
And his footwork is great.
Oh, his footwork is excellent. Absolutely excellent. Probably the best footwork that I've seen from a young offensive lineman, maybe across the league. The way he fits onto blocks in the running game, his foot speed to move laterally in his pass sets, and the depth that he gets despite the fact that he's not the longest of guys or the tallest of guys is really unique. And that's kind of all the things that made him a first-round pick. The other thing that I think really stands out about his game is that he's got great upper body strength. And he's not the biggest of guys, like I just mentioned. He's 6'2", 6'3", 300 pounds. He's not a Trent Brown type left tackle. He's not even a Nate Solder type left tackle.
Yeah.
But he's got a really, really, really strong arms, upper body, chest area. And when you watch guys try to bull rush him and go through him to the quarterback, he doesn't move very often, and he doesn't move much. So those are really some of the things that stood out about him in terms of his skill set. And I really think, you know, a lot of people have discussed this, but the fact that it's not just necessarily that he's an upgrade over Newhouse in a vacuum of replacing Newhouse at left tackle and plug and play. It's also what he's going to do to the other four guys and how he can just upgrade this unit as a whole. I think offensive line play, and Dante Scarnecchia talks about this all the time, offensive line play, maybe more than any other kind of part of football or aspect of football, is about continuity and having everybody on the same page and everybody doing kind of the same thing and taking the same steps together. It's a five-man unit. It's really a type of thing where the sum of the parts can often be better than the individual talent. You know, the Patriots, besides Wynn, is a first-round pick, of course. If you look at their other spots, you know, we're not talking about guys that were drafted, you know, top 10. Right? Shaq Mason's a fourth-round pick. Joe Tooney's a third-round pick. Marcus Cannon, I think, was a fifth-round pick. Ted Karras was a sixth-round pick. So these are not guys that are necessarily highly touted players outside of Wynn.
Right.
And the Patriots have always been able to get a ton out of those guys because of how well they're coached and obviously, and also just how well they work together. So having a guy that can work together and elevate the entire play of the whole unit over a guy like Newhouse, I think is really an underrated aspect of this whole thing. And it might not just be the fact that Wynn himself is making the offense better, but Wynn is going to then make Tooney better, who's going to make Karras better, who's going to make Mason better, who's going to make Cannon better. And then therefore everybody's going to, you know, the whole thing is going to look better come Sunday, hopefully.
Well, my big concern, Evan, is the kind of pressure they're going to get over center. And I think, you know, one thing that we've seen throughout the years is when the Patriots have been bull rushed, it's shown weaknesses in the offensive line. And, you know, again, in that first quarter, we saw some of that again on Sunday with the Eagles getting through and really beating the hell out of Brady. And that just can't happen again. And I mean, some of that was Marshall Newhouse, but some of it was just the whole dam was breaking in multiple spots. And, you know, to your point about Dante Scarnecchia, the thing that he says that sticks out the most to me is the whole offensive line seeing the protection the same way, or seeing the defensive front the same way. And I think on Sunday in the first quarter, for actually most of the first half, they were not seeing things the same way. And that's really what's got to be resolved quickly against Dallas, because, you know, with or without Isaiah Wynn in there, they can't have systemic breakdowns along the front.
Yeah, that is pretty much Dante's, I would say, his golden rule of offensive line play. It's never really been about, for him at least, you know, the techniques and the play calls and the schemes and all that kind of stuff has always been secondary to just everybody seeing it through the same lens, seeing the exact same things together. So even Bill Belichick talks about this at times. If you're going to mess up, let's mess up together, right? Because it's easier to fix if we're all messing up. It's easier to cover up also if we're all messing up and doing the same thing, because maybe that thing that you end up actually doing doesn't turn into a complete disaster. So really doing things together, regardless of if they're right or wrong, is always really important. And I think that when Newhouse right now, according to Pro Football Focus, has been over the last month the worst starting left tackle in the NFL. Ted Karras over the last month has been the 24th rated center. He's now overall the 24th rated center in PFF system out of about 40 guys. So 32 starters, 24th ranked. That's also not very good. So you've been kind of replacing two very, very key spots at center and left tackle. And I think Karras has really filled in very well and filled in admirably. And I don't look at him as kind of as big of a crutch as Newhouse has been, but upgrading that one spot I think is really going to pay huge dividends. But before we talk about Dallas, I do want to kind of pose this question to you of what you kind of see the biggest issue. I think we kind of just hit on the head that the offensive line is probably the biggest issue. So maybe a secondary issue to you, is it pass catchers? Is it Brady? Is it the running game? Where do you see as kind of the area where this team needs to improve the most offensively to get where it wants to go?
Moving the chains early in games. What concerns me, Evan, is the Patriots coming out and putting up the effort in the first quarter and the first half against the Ravens and the Eagles in back-to-back games separated by a bye week. There is no excuse for that to happen this week against the Cowboys on home turf. They have got to protect their turf at Gillette Stadium. They've got to get out to some type of, if not a lead, they've got to show some ability to move the chains early in this game, because if they don't and Dallas's offensive line takes over, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that Dallas wants to come in and play smash mouth, and if the Patriots don't, you know, mark their territory, so to speak, with a, you know, power game or some type of possession passing game of their own, I think they're screwed. And that's what I would look for early in this game as a telltale.
Yeah, interesting stat to kind of back that point up. The Patriots this season have only scored 3 times on their opening drive. They're 3 for 10, which usually is something that they're very, very good at. So that 30% scoring efficiency is tied for 19th in the NFL. So right now they're tied with the Buffalo Bills in scoring efficiency on their opening drive. I believe that they're towards the middle of the pack as well in first quarter scoring. So they're not really getting off to great starts. It's really been kind of second half, you know, that basically what we saw in Philadelphia, where they came out in that first the first drive of the third quarter, and that was kind of their opening drive of the game, right? That they went hurry up, they moved the ball pretty well, they got everything sort of clicking. It was the only good drive that they had all game, but it was one that did work out. I agree that really getting off to better starts is key. I mean, last season, if you look at across the whole board of the Belichick era, really, at least for the last 10 years or so, this decade, they've been near the top of the league in that opening drive stat. They've always had great scripts, and they've always come out and really scored successfully and quickly in games and gotten out to really big leads and played ahead. And they haven't been able to really separate themselves early on in games from teams the way that they used to be able to. I think the other thing true too, other than the offensive line, of course, because we mentioned that, you know, already, is probably something to do with the pass catchers. I don't want to pick on the pass catchers, and I don't want to go down the road of Antonio Brown and all that kind of stuff.
Or Gronk coming back. Absolutely not. Yeah.
It's not necessarily about all that. But what I do think that it is about is that right now the timing and the execution by the receivers is to the point where Brady at this stage of his career, and he's still really, really good, but he needs more out of these receivers in the details of the game, the route running details. The only guy that really seems to feel comfortable and know exactly what he's doing with his route running is Edelman, and maybe Philip Dorsett also, who I think is probably pretty comfortable as well. But you got a new guy in Sanu, you got a rookie in Harry that they're trying to bring along, both of those players. And there's a lot of evidence on Sunday of just guys running the wrong routes or guys kind of cutting corners and not getting to exactly the depth. You know, when you talk about running a dig in the Patriots system, a little in cut, they want you to run to exactly a certain spot and cut inside at exactly a certain angle, right? They want it to be precise. So you want to have an 8 yard out, right? You run that ball, you run that route all the way up the field 8 yards. You don't run it to 7.5. Right, you don't run it to 9. You run it exactly to 8. And those are the little things that Brady expects out of his receivers. And a lot of people talk about the trust, the circle of trust, and earning Brady's kind of confidence in you to do those things. Those are the things that they're taught, that kind of show that in practice. So a couple of instances on Sunday, Jacoby Myers, for example, he ran that route where he cut in, and Brady expected him to cut out, and Brady actually ended up throwing an incomplete along the sideline. The other one that I thought was a little bit rounded off in the game was that almost interception that Brady threw in the end zone to Mohamed Sanu. I think that the route was okay, but it wasn't as good as it could have been. Sanu kind of rounded it off at the top of the route and didn't really come back to the ball, and it allowed the corner to get back into the play and almost pick it off. Those are the little things that this offense, the timing and the execution, that they really need to clean up. And if they can clean those things up, then I do think that their talent level and the sum of the parts is going to be good enough. But they really need to focus on the details. There were instances in that game on Sunday where there are plays to be made, and the details just weren't really there. That first third down of the game, Julian Edelman had the entire sideline with two blockers in front of him against two Eagle defenders, and they just couldn't get the timing of that screen down. Remember, Brady kind of came back across to it. He had pressure in his face. Edelman sort of tripped out of the backfield also on one of his linemen, and just the whole thing just looked sloppy. If they had hit that cleanly, then Edelman's probably got a 20 or 25-yard gain down the sideline there. He's going to be in a foot race with one defender on that side of the field. If he beats that guy, he might be going to the house with it. So those are the little things that you really need to see the Patriots improve on here, I think, going forward.
The thing that I want to see when they get in the red zone, I do want to see N'Keal Harry in the game. Because
it's baffling to me that he didn't play at all in the red zone.
Well, here's the thing. When you're talking about a red zone route, there's a lot less complexity in theory in just running a corner or a dig or some type of flare to get to a spot and then have Brady throw to that spot and tell N'Keal, look, go up and do what you did in college, fight for the ball and come down with it. And that is exactly what they're missing. Certainly in the red area and definitely in the goal to go area. I mean, people would argue, and I think there's some legitimacy to it, that they're not running the ball in the goal to go situations. And yes, that is a problem. But in terms of having a Gronk-esque target who can go up and is just bigger than everybody and fight for it and come down with the ball, I think you have got to see if N'Keal Harry can do that before the postseason comes rolling around.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the kind of the next step for Harry. He finally got out there. He showed some good things as a run blocker. He showed some flashes as a receiver. The slant that he caught, I thought, was a pretty nice route. The screen that they threw him, he actually danced around Malcolm Jenkins and turned a negative play into a 4-yard gain, which we'll take. Obviously, you hope that those become longer gains in the future. But the one thing I think is the next step for him, both in the red zone and in the field of play, is just trying to test the defense a little bit deep and see if he can come down with the ball, you know, a jump ball type situation, which we've seen him do in college. We saw him do it in camp. Like, it seemed like once a practice in training camp, Brady or Stidham would throw a jump ball up to him or Hoyer, and he would come down with it over one of the Patriots cornerbacks. He's a great jump ball receiver. It's one of his best skills as a player. So putting him on the field and allowing him to get vertical down the defense, and if he's got a one-on-one down the field, then Brady's going to have to kind of get used to just throwing it up there and seeing if he can make a play in some of these situations. Not the most efficient thing to do necessarily, but every once in a while when you need a big play, it's going to be something that they're going to have to rely upon a little bit. And obviously in the red zone too, the fade, you know, a high point fade or a route that he can box somebody out and use his size. Those are all going to be things that I think that are going to come eventually, and they're kind of just waiting for him to kind of get a little bit more comfortable. It was his first game out, right? So, you know, you got to get a little bit of cobwebs out and get some of the things out and work the kinks out. Once you get all those things through, though.
I just want to ask you, Evan, do you think sometimes Josh and Tom get locked in to throwing precision routes too much and not into throwing to a spot and just have a player go up for, I hate to use the expression 50-50 ball, but you don't see them do that much.
No, and it's really to their credit in terms of planning to not do those things and not doing them a ton. It's usually in reality probably about a 30 to 35% chance that you're going to complete a throw like that. So it's not a very high completion rate. I mean, if you look at kind of the success rate, for example, of like a high point fade in the red zone, like you throw a goal line fade to a guy like a N'Keal Harry, like a Gronk when he was in the prime of his career, that's actually one of the lower percentage throws that you can make in that area of the field. But when you do it once every three, you know, you have a whole set of downs down there and you just do it once on a second down and you got third down to work with or even fourth down in some situations, it's really not a bad idea to just take that chance and see if Harry can make a play. And he's one of those guys where that's a part of his game and they kind of just need to welcome the fact, I think, a little bit that he is going to be that kind of receiver where you just need to get the ball in his hands and let him play. He's not going to be the type of guy that you're going to line up at the X and have him run routes and have him just win consistently by separating with great route running or great technique or precision or anything like that. He is an athlete. He's a guy you got to get the ball in his hands. You got to throw jump balls to him. You got to throw him the ball on the move so we can create after the catch. Those are all the things that he was doing at ASU. And to the ASU's coaching staff's credit too, Herm Edwards and those guys, they did a great job his senior season, especially his last year at Arizona State, of doing exactly that. Just finding ways to just get him the ball in space and letting him operate, or finding ways to get him one-on-one coverage down the field and letting him go over the top of the defense and haul in passes. When things weren't going well for Harry in terms of route running and stuff like that, they would just move him around the formation. They run him on drags and things over the middle, give him runways to run with the football. They'd throw him screens, wide receiver screens, as we saw. He did catch one of those on Sunday. That's been a huge part of his game going back to really early on at Arizona State. So I think that those are little things that we're going to continue to see a little bit more of, just get the ball in his hands and then see what he can do from there, because it's not going to necessarily be the type of receiver like a Julian Edelman who's going to create all these, you know, amazing situations for the quarterback with tons of separation and great route running and precision and all those kinds of things. So, yeah, I fully agree that they need to just let Harry loose a little bit in those respects and let him play and just play football. You know, that's what he's going to be good at. He's way more Dez Bryant than he is anything close to a guy like a Julian Edelman, right? You know, that's who he is.
And I know you want to move on, but
no,
you don't spend a first round pick on a guy and then coddle him through a rookie year in a situation where you need receivers, need playmaking receivers. This isn't a situation where the Patriots have a load of receivers, stacked up in front of them. And again, if it's a first round pick you're going to spend on him, then I think you need to act like he's a first round pick and find out if he can contribute coming down the stretch.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like they did with Sony Michel last year. There was no real coddling. There was no real right away. Once he got out there in Jacksonville, they were pounding the rock with Sony. Didn't work right away. You know, remember that Jacksonville game, that Detroit game, a lot of people were already calling him a bust after those first two games of his career. And then it really paid dividends later in the season once he kind of figured it out. Before we talk about the Cowboys, and we're going to do that at length, football season is in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline, bet.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus or your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head over to our website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook expert. Someday I'm going to have that read down by heart like Sierra and Alex do. That today is not that day, but eventually those two, they can just rattle it right off, right? You know,
believe me, having been a veteran of that read, it takes some getting used to, but you will knock that down, I'm sure.
But I do love the people over at Bet Online. I used it actually this past weekend to bet on my Bombers on Saturday against Cortland, and they pulled out the win. So thanks, Bet Online, for a little bit of an extra bonus there. Let's call it that. And let's move on to the Cowboys now, Trags. Bill Belichick today at his press conference on Wednesday pretty much said everything nice you could possibly say about Dak Prescott, the Cowboys quarterback. We were talking about this too before we started recording. In my 2 years on the beat, I can only think of two other quarterbacks that Belichick heaped this much praise on, and that was Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. So Dak kind of joined some elite company here, and Belichick basically, it made it sound like if Belichick had an MVP vote, then Dak might get his.
I don't blame Belichick for pumping his tires, because if you take a look at the numbers that Dak is putting up, he's never thrown for 4,000 yards. He's on pace to throw for 5,000 this year.
Yeah.
And the big thing to me, you know, when you take a look, Evan, at his receiving core, it's really, you know, started to break through and put up huge numbers. When you have Michael Gallup, he made that spectacular throw catch on Sunday against Detroit on a route. He admitted he ran the wrong route, so he made the great catch to kind of make up for it. But Michael Gallup and Randall Cobb, and then obviously if Amari Cooper plays, this will be the first time, I do believe, all season that the Patriots secondary will be really tested in terms of who's going to cover who. And I'm curious to see who gets bracket coverage or bracket responsibility, and where do you put Stephon Gilmore. To me, that's one of the interesting matchups I want to, you know, monitor early in this game.
Yeah, Amari Cooper in particular, and his status is kind of up in the air, although I do think he practiced a little bit today. Amari Cooper is as complete of a receiver as you have in this league in terms of his route running abilities combined with his athleticism. He's fantastic at the line of scrimmage against press coverage with his release package. He's fantastic at the top of the route and to the moves that he can do against corners at the top of the route. He's great after the catch. He's just pretty much good at everything. So he's a really tough cover. A lot of guys, I think, around the league, you know, other than some of the top guys, a guy like Michael Thomas is maybe like this too, where it's not just like they have one particular skill set that makes them elite. You know, a guy, for example, like a Mike Evans, he's just elite because of his size and speed combination, his ability to go up and get passes, right? This is different, where Amari Cooper, I think, is really the total package, and everything that he's done since he got to Dallas really backs that up. Their record, their offensive production, everything is just off the charts up across the board since they made that trade. This was pretty much the best trade that they in the NFL over the last couple of years in my mind.
Well, and you know, they spend a six-rounder on him, and I think that's incredible value for him. But when you take a look at the receiving core and the numbers they put up against Detroit, and granted it's Detroit secondary, I understand that, but Michael Gallup, 9 catches, 13 targets, 148 yards.
Yeah.
Randall Cobb, the 4 catches, 7 targets, and 115 yards, and a 49-yard touchdown. And Amari Cooper only had 3 catches. He was targeted 8 times, but he only had 38 yards. When you can spread the ball around like that, and Jason Witten, let's not forget him, coming out of retirement, 5 catches on 7 targets, they have the ability to genuinely spread the ball around and really put a strain on the pass defense of the Patriots, which has been pretty much by far and away the best pass defense in the NFL this year.
Yeah, and we can talk about now just how do you stop Dak, right? You know, we talked about how great he is. And the other kind of element of this, too, is Kellen Moore and what the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys has been able to kind of awaken this offense. And I think over the last couple of years, especially under Jason Garrett and his tenure year there, their offense has kind of been labeled a very boring offense, right? They run very kind of pedestrian type of scheme. It's not that way anymore. Kellen Moore has really kind of woken up the entire thing. And they're throwing the ball down the field, too. Dak also leads the league in air yards. So he's throwing the ball. This is not dink and dunk, right? This is a vertical now passing attack. And the other element of it, too, that I think is kind of might be a surprise to some people was that this is nothing like what the Patriots faced with Lamar Jackson, right? This is a drop back passing offense. Dak Prescott uses his legs as kind of a secondary option and is kind of like a bonus kind of in terms of being able to extend plays or even kind of the designed quarterback runs. They run a little bit of zone read type stuff where he's reading the end and he can either give it to Zeke or run it himself. But designed quarterback runs, they've only run 9 of them all year. So this is not an offense where they're really relying heavily on Dak's legs to produce offense. They're relying on his arm. And he's winning from the pocket, too. He's throwing the ball outside the numbers extremely well. His accuracy to the intermediate and deep level of the field outside the numbers, he's got the third most completions in the league on throws outside the numbers, only behind Rodgers and Russell Wilson. So he's right up there in the league in terms of throwing the football down the field, throwing it accurately down the field, and throwing it from the pocket. He has got the highest Pro Football Focus grade in the league on passes on his first read. So when this guy's in rhythm and when he's getting the ball out quickly, he is an elite, elite quarterback. Now, the downfall to him still so far right now is that when you can get him off his first read and get him into that second and third reads or get him even into scramble drills, he's a little bit more turnover prone and his PFF grade actually gets cut in half. And he's 33rd out of 36 qualified quarterbacks on non-primary read throws. So that's going to be the key, I think, for the Patriots, and it's going to be my game plan for them this week as well, is finding ways to figure out what Kellen Moore is going to do to kind of scheme open those first reads and getting Dak off that first read and making him beat you by scanning the field and going through a full progression.
So I'm going to counter that by saying the Cowboys obviously saw what Lamar Jackson did when he got outside the pocket, and then he was able to throw down the field. The Patriots had a lot of trouble with that because I think when you can put the Patriots defensive front, which is an outstanding one, and the strength of the Patriots defensive line is between the tackles, right? Especially the way Danny Shelton and Lawrence Guy have been playing and Adam Butler, obviously throw him in there. Don't you want to move away from those guys and try to still find a way to throw the ball down the field? To me, that signals a mobile pocket. And I think Dak Prescott is certainly capable of doing that.
Yeah, I think that's the best question of the day is sort of what does Jason Garrett and Kellen Moore and the Dallas Cowboys watch that Baltimore tape and say, okay, we're not going to be able to install the Veer and the Wing T overnight, right? So we can't go completely that direction. But we do have RPOs, we do have zone read elements, we do have bootlegs and other forms of moving the pocket and getting Dak on the move. Do we just go into a game plan that is heavy in all of those kind of areas? Because they do already have those things installed into their playbook and into their system. That would probably be what I would do until the Patriots prove that they can stop it. I actually asked Jason Garrett on the conference call today that exact question. Did you watch Baltimore's game and see the success that they had with the mobile quarterback? And are you going to try to then emulate it? And he said, you know, we're at our best when we do what we do and we focus on what we're doing. I'm actually quoting him directly. And he did also mention, you know, they have a unique collection of personnel on their team and they're doing a great job with that group. But we like our guys too. And we like what we're doing offensively. So that's really what we'll continue to stay focused on, was his exact quote. The unique collection of personnel, I think, is a really interesting point. And sort of the fact that in order to beat the Patriots the same way that Baltimore did, you kind of already have to have those things in place. You're not going to be able to just practice those things
right
3 days and be able to run them with the precision and the execution that Baltimore has after running them for almost 2 years, going back to Lamar's rookie season when he started taking over there for Joe Flacco. So they're not going to be able to just do that, but they do have, like I mentioned off the top of this, is that they do have the zone read, they do have the RPO, they do have those elements in their offense. They just don't use them a ton. It's really more of a supplement than it is the primary aspect of their offense, but maybe this week it does become the primary aspect.
Yeah, I and the other thing to counter what I was saying just a few moments ago is, what is the strength of the Cowboys offense? It probably is their offensive line.
Yeah.
And that's probably what Jason Garrett was getting at when he was saying their unique personnel. And I think he understands better than anybody that that Dallas offensive line is as good as it gets in the NFL. And I know the Eagles, when they made their Super Bowl run a couple of years ago, they were considered the best offensive line unit. But I think the way this, you know, certainly between Zach Martin, Travis Frederick, and Connor Williams, they're tremendous. If they get Lyle Collins back and Tyron Smith plays, you're talking about probably the best group of five there is in the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely. And those are two big kind of things. Tyron Smith, it looks like he's going to play at least to start, but he's kind of been a little bit injury prone, I would call him, over the last year or so and in and out of the lineup for them. He's sort of their X factor. Like, he's their Jenga piece, right? If you pull Tyron Smith out of that offensive line, out of that offense, and you look at kind of the numbers across the board of what they do when he is not in there, it's a pretty stark difference. It's as big of a difference or as significant of a difference as any kind of one player has that's not a quarterback in this league on a unit. It's very similar in a lot of ways to like what Brady and the Patriots offense was with and without Rob Gronkowski for stretches, right? When they would lose Gronk in sort of seasons like 2013, for example, that offense really kind of suffered from not having the big guy in there. Tyron Smith is a similar guy. Lyle Collins on the other side might be the best right tackle in the NFL besides Lane Johnson. So he's right up there as well in in terms of skill and just talent, because that really segues into my next question nicely. It's just, I think that we talked a lot about Baltimore already and how that could impact this game, but I do think that there's an element of fear that Zeke Elliott and Dak Prescott are going to come into this game and run all over the Patriots.
Yeah, I don't know if I have that same fear, because I definitely don't have that fear. Not the way, as I said a couple of minutes ago, Danny Shelton and Lawrence Guy and Adam Butler have been playing. I mean, that performance against the Eagles was as dominant as I can remember any group of three defensive linemen playing in quite some time, probably going back to the Vince Wilfork classic two-gap days. I mean, I'm sure Malcolm Brown had his moments where he, you know, was tremendous when he was here in New England. But I got to tell you, that performance by that group of three by the Patriots on Sunday has allayed any fears, in my mind anyway, that the Cowboys are going to be able to, you know, run the ball at will.
Yeah, it's interesting because early on in that game against Philly, they were getting blown off the ball. You know, they were really getting blown off the ball. And Belichick actually said on Monday that he thought that they played well for all four quarters.
Yeah, no, and I asked that question.
By that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I asked that question. I almost jumped in and said, really?
Yeah.
Because I thought I did not see the first quarter that same way, but maybe what he saw on film was much different than the way we read it.
Yeah, I guess so. But I saw in film plenty of instances where Danny Shelton and Lawrence Guy, but Danny Shelton in particular, early on in that game was taking on double teams and getting moved off the ball quickly in a hurry. And then for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a scheme change or something like that, that they kind of figured out. I don't think it was anything to do with that. They just started playing better and they just instantly sort of flipped a switch. And for the last three quarters of the game, a big part of it, not to take anything away from what the Patriots did, certainly was Lane Johnson going out. That line was not the same after Lane Johnson got hurt, but at the same time, it really was kind of flipping a switch. And the final three quarters of the game, they were absolutely just nails that entire game. The one thing that the Eagles do, other than kind of using Dak as a threat as in those zone read option type plays to kind of hold the backside of the play up, like the defensive end that he's reading on the play or the linebacker at the second level that he's reading on the play, kind of holds everything up by having him fake even that he might actually take off and keep the ball and go around the edge. they are a very diverse rushing attack too, because they have all that talent on the offensive line. They can go zone against you. They can run gap schemes, and they can pull guards and hit you in the mouth. And they can also go sideline to sideline against you. And they obviously have a really good back in Zeke. So this is a tough matchup. And this is why the Dallas offense is number one in DVOA and number four in points and number one in yards by a wide margin, is because they do have kind of a two-way threat on offense. It's not just their passing game or just their running game. They can do both. So it's going to be a really challenging matchup, a really fun one for the Patriots, certainly. I think that this is one of the better matchups just on one side of the ball versus the other side of the ball that we've had all year.
Yeah, and I think flipping the script to the defense, the Cowboy defense against the Patriot offense, is almost as intriguing in terms of what the Patriots are going to do to try and contain Michael Bennett.
Yeah, it's also the opposite, sort of, because the Dallas offense is defense is 20th in DVOA. The Patriots defense is currently 12th, which would be their worst finish in the stats since 2003. So that, by their standards, is not good at all. So two units, I would say, that have underperformed given expectations. I think this Dallas defense with Lawrence and with Robert Quinn and Leighton Vander Esch and Jalen Smith at the linebacker level and Byron Jones in the secondary, they have a ton of talent that hasn't really gelled together this year. Remember last year, especially towards the end of the season, Trags, they were pretty dominant on defense. They had a really, really good defense.
Speed.
Yeah, they were rolling. And those linebackers, in particular, Vander Esch, had an excellent rookie year. He's sort of kind of come back to the pack a little bit this year. But the question really is, I think, that needs to be answered here, is what aspect of this Dallas defense, if any, kind of scares you? And maybe, a player that scares you, too, that could kind of wreck the Patriots' day here.
Well, the number one aspect of the Dallas defense that concerns me is speed and Leighton Vander Esch going side to side as a fearsome tackler. And obviously, I don't know if he's going to the Hall of Fame like Chris Collinsworth said. I think it was Collinsworth, right, who put him in the Hall of Fame in his rookie year. But they are just very, very, very fast. But I don't know if you heard Mike Lombardi on Dallas radio a couple of days ago. He made a very interesting point. And he said, when the Cowboys play 30 minutes or more on defense, they're 5-17. When they play 30 minutes or less, they're 20-4. And he says, why is that? It's because the Cowboys are small on defense. They rely on quickness. They rely on speed. They rely on movement to make plays. When they have to stand in the middle of the ring and really go toe-to-toe with you physically for 32, 33 minutes, they wear down. So, you know, he expects that the Patriots will go tempo to try and wear him down and see how they can control the game. And frankly, I'm surprised we haven't seen more tempo from the Patriots, given how much success they have shown in spurts against the Browns, Ravens, and against the Eagles.
Yeah, I think tempo, just to kind of answer that part of what you presented is interesting. I think that they might be holding back some of the things with the tempo. I think that they realize that it's going to be something that they can lean on, but they don't want it to be their entire offense. They don't want to go Chip Kelly on us, right? And just run tempo all the time and have that be the entire offense. I really think that they want to save it for spots where they really need it, like when they came out at halftime against Philly in a close game and they really needed a touchdown drive. That's when they brought the tempo back into the mix. I also think that there's some elements of saving that tempo and saving some of the things that they're going to do out of those no huddle kind of attacks for January and for the postseason.
I get that. And the other thing to keep in mind, we say, oh, why don't they go up tempo the whole time? Well, because you have five offensive linemen who need to keep up the pace. And the one thing you don't want to do is wear down your own offensive line and get sloppy. And the other thing is, if you're up tempo and you start throwing incompletions, it's really not great complementary football, and you can get yourself off the field and put your defense back on the field a lot more quickly than you really want to.
Yeah, and my thing about what kind of scares me about the Cowboys defense. Not a ton. I don't think that this is a great defense. I think that the Patriots could probably score on Dallas if the Patriots do and take care of their own business, right? Similar to Philadelphia, if the Patriots had taken care of their own business against Philadelphia, then they would have put up more points than they did. It wasn't, I don't think, at least watching it on the tape, that it was so much that the Philly defense dominated that game or played some great shutout game. I think it was actually the Patriots offense shooting themselves in the foot. I think it's something similar could happen with Dallas. But the one thing about their front, they play kind of a Seattle-style front, and their coverages are similar to Seattle, but they have a little bit more diversity in the secondary with what they'll do with their coverage systems. Seattle was just basically cover three the entire game with a little bit of cover one man sprinkled in there in certain situations, third down, red area, that type of thing. Dallas will mix it up a lot more. They'll play some split safety. They'll play some post safety. They'll do some different things in the secondary. In the front, though, they're basically the same as Seattle. They're a 4-3 team. Right, and they're going to run a lot of really aggressive kind of pass rushes with Lawrence and with Quinn, and now with Michael Bennett, which just kind of brings this whole thing full circle. Michael Bennett now, as Belichick said this morning, is basically their penetrating three technique. What his original role, at least in some cases, was with Seattle when he was there winning Super Bowls with the Seahawks. So that is now what he's doing there. So this is a front that's going to be aggressive. They're going to shoot gaps. They're going to try to get in the backfield. They're going to pin their ears back and try to get after the quarterback as well. That kind of element of how this offensive line is able to handle those things, I think, is the only thing that I could see similar to what Philadelphia did in terms of kind of shutting down this Patriots offense a little bit. But I wanted to get your opinion also just on the whole Bennett storyline, because it is an interesting one.
It's simple. I spoke to RJ Ochoa, as I filled in on Cowboys beat this week, and he, writes for Blogging the Boys for SB Nation. And he had a great tweet about the impact of, Michael Bennett. And that is, Michael Bennett had 2.5 sacks, in 6 weeks, I think it was, with the Patriots.
Yeah.
And, let me find it here. And 'cause I want to be right about it. Coming up shortly. Give me one second. Here we go. With six games in New England, he had 2.5 sacks. With the Cowboys in three games, he has 3 sacks. And he also points out the fact that your sack leaders through week 11, Robert Quinn, 8.5, DeMarcus Lawrence, 4.5. Michael Bennett's already fourth on that list with 3. So Michael Bennett's had a huge impact. And when I asked him about it, he said it's purely scheme. They're letting him in passing, obvious passing situations, pin his ear back and do what he did in Seattle, and that is just find any way to get after the quarterback. And, you know, I brought up to him that here in New England, because he asked me, well, why didn't that work in New England? And I said to him, well, I think the Patriots expected him to buy in more to, maybe some stunning inside or playing inside and holding gaps a little bit more than he was used to doing, for the first 10 years of his career. And it just never meshed. And then Brett Bielema and him didn't see eye to eye, and it just went downhill quickly. I think with the Cowboys, like Belichick said on Wednesday, you're definitely going to see him in passing situations and in third down and long situations, which leads me to my next point. That is, if you're the Patriots, you better stay out of third and long. That's a situation in this particular game, given the propensity of the Cowboys to really pin their ears back and want to get after the quarterback. You got to stay out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bennett, it's interesting because Belichick was asked about Rob Marinelli's defense, and the first thing that he said was that the fronts are exactly what they ran in Seattle in the golden age of Seattle's defense in the Legion of Boom. And then they make the trade for Bennett, and now you kind of put the dots together and you're like, well, so Bennett's basically playing in the same exact front that he was playing in the best years of his career now. And the scheme change from that to what he was being asked to do with the Patriots is really allowing him to blossom again. And now with Seattle, he's playing that Dallas, he's playing that 3 technique role in a 4-man line where he's not going to get doubled a whole lot either, because that's a spot that's a little bit difficult to get a double team on when you have the 3 other guys spaced out across the line. So that's a spot that just inherently with scheme and with alignment is usually a great spot for a premier pass rusher. For example, in LA with the Rams, that's exactly where they put Aaron Donald all the time, is that three technique role. And it's really difficult to get a double team there. And if you get a double team there, then you're really leaving yourself one-on-one and vulnerability in other spots on the line as well. So Bennett is eating in a spot that he's very, very comfortable playing out of, which is the total opposite from what he was doing with the Patriots. So those guys up front for Dallas, that they can kind of wreck the day here for the Patriots, especially if this Patriots offensive line and Isaiah Wynn doesn't kind of just fix everything about the line. And there's some struggles there.
And the Patriots have to find a way to run the ball. Like, even if it's running outside.
I know,
outside,
we say that every week.
I know, but in this particular situation, one way to counter that aggressive pass rush, even if Bennett's not on the field, is to run screens, run draws, run delayed traps, whatever, to try and bring the offense, the defensive lineman up the field if Dallas is playing that aggressively with their front and trying to get after, you know, get upfield. I would want to see the Patriots counter that with some screens and some draws. And certainly, you know, I think Josh McDaniels was asked that on Tuesday. You know, how does he evaluate the team's ability to run screens this year? And he said everything could be better. Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of an acknowledgement that it's been hit and miss.
Yeah, I mean, it was against Philly. That was kind of the game plan against Philly to slow down Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and all of those guys, was to run those screens early in the game. And they had a few of them worked, right? You know, you had the first play of the game for the Patriots on offense was a 12-yard completion to Sony Michel on a screen pass. They also had the 30-yarder to Rex Burkhead in that third quarter on that drive right out of the half. That was basically the biggest play of that drive, other than it kind of got overshadowed a little bit by Edelman's, you know, double pass, obviously. But that was the drive. That was the drive starter, was that 30-yarder. That was the one that got them down the field. I wanted to end it on this note, though. I think that there is a little bit of a head coaching mismatch. I think Kellen Moore and Rob Marinelli are pretty good coaches and coordinators and have pretty good chances against this Patriots team. But Jason Garrett versus Bill Belichick is, I think, a pretty lopsided coaching battle. I mean, what is your confidence level in Jason Garrett being able to get his team ready to beat Bill Belichick in Belichick's own house here on Sunday?
You know, it's funny, Evan, I also spoke about this with RJ Ochoa of Blogging the Boys, and I asked him that same question. I'm like, this appears to be a coaching mismatch, right?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, I can see why the national perception is that way, but for those who've been covering the Cowboys, Jason Garrett has always been good for one or two statement wins late in the year when you think the world is falling down around him.
Right.
Namely, the way the Cowboys responded against the Eagles on that Sunday night game after they just lost to the Jets.
Destroyed
they blew them. They blew the doors off the Eagles, 37-10. You know, they had that win last week against Detroit on the road. You know, after, you know, the way the game ended against the Vikings. I don't ever count Jason Garrett out. And the other thing I would tell you is, that RJ told me, he said that nobody has better control of their locker room than Jason Garrett. And I'm like, really? Is that true? And he said, yes, they are very loyal and play incredibly hard for Jason Garrett for whatever reason it is. So I would tell you X's and O's. I mean, there's nobody's better than Belichick. I don't care who the opposition is. But in terms of playing hard, I would expect Jason Garrett to have a competitive team coming into Foxborough on Sunday, and the Patriots have some issues and have some transition going on certainly on the offensive line. And I would not be shocked if Jason Garrett came in here and pulled off a stunner.
Yeah, I agree that they're going to play hard. And I think that Jets game, as much as people want to point to, they lost the Jets. That was a horrible effort by Dallas. They almost came back late in that game, but just to be down at the Jets that much to begin with was terrible. But three out of their four losses this year have been by 4 points or less. I think that that's kind of going to be something that is going to haunt Garrett for a while until he gets over that. His ability to coach late in games. And that's really where Belichick kind of separates the weak from the strong ones, right? You know, can you do, for example, you know, I hate to keep going back to this game because it stings, but can you do what Doug Peterson and the Philadelphia Eagles did in the Super Bowl a few years ago and not let off the gas and be able to finish the game, right? And Dallas has had some issues with Garrett, under Garrett. I think that's where the national perception comes from, is that they've had a ton of talent. They got the quarterback. They got the number one offense in football. But can they do the situational things they need to do at the end of the game to not lose to the Patriots by a field goal in this game, if it comes down to that? That's going to be the question, because the loss to the Jets was close. The loss to the Saints was close. You know, those were the types of games that they tend to lose, is when Jason Garrett needs to kind of own up and sack up late in these games and figure out how to get his team over the hump.
I would not disagree with that. I think those are very fair points. And, you know, the way they played against the Saints almost felt like a victory for the Cowboys, even though obviously it wasn't. But, right. You know, that was down in New Orleans. They played really, really hard to the end. And maybe that's the kind of game we see on Sunday against the Patriots. But, you know, to me, it's a 50-50 flip of the coin when you're talking about games that close. Even when you have a great team like the Patriots and, you know, one of the best coaching staffs in the NFL, I do wonder sometimes about whether or not every single decision matters, and whether or not sometimes the luck of the draw does play a factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be really fun to be there with you on Sunday, Trags. And we're going to break the whole game down. The whole CLNS media crew will be there. Is there anything that you want to tease before we wrap this thing up?
No, I would just, this week's been a busy week on the CLNS podcasting network. Absolutely. For yours truly. Patriots beat with Sierra Goodwill was a winner. The Cowboys beat that I hosted with RJ Ochoa. Please give that a listen. RJ knows the Cowboys back and forth, and I would definitely give that a listen. And, you know, we'll have you covered on Twitter at Patriots CLNS and, of course, on game day.
Absolutely, and really looking forward to this one. I think this is going to be one of the better games of the year. Got some really great ones coming up, you know, with Kansas City coming soon, and Houston as well, and Philly. Philly didn't really live up to the expectation of the Super Bowl rematch necessarily, but it was still a good game again with two good teams. So hopefully this one gives us a little bit more to sink our teeth into in terms of positives for the Patriots offense, certainly. And Tom looked a little bit happier out there today on the press surprise press conference, really, is audible on us.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. That was an audible, right? I mean, he wasn't supposed to speak until Friday.
Correct. There's been maybe one or two weeks this year where he's spoken on Wednesday, but 95% of the time it's on Friday, and that was not the plan this week. He was on the schedule Friday and pulled the last-minute switch.
Well, you know what'll really make him happy is if he goes, you know, 30 for 35 with 385 yards, 4 touchdowns, and no picks. Then we'll get a great smiling Tom Brady after the game, unlike what we got after the game. And he doesn't get his brains beaten in throughout the game. We'll get a much better Tom Brady post game in that event.
Yeah, I honestly, you know, I think a lot of people try to turn his Sunday into a negative and talk about, you know, they still won the game and he can't say anything positive. I actually take it as that you want your quarterback to want more, to want to play better, right? Like, you don't want the quarterback to be satisfied with the offensive effort that they put out on Sunday, even though they won the game. And he basically said that, you know, he said, we won the game. That's great. We're glad we won, but we need to be way better on offense. And I would think that people would want that. I wouldn't think that people would want Tom Brady to get up there and be all smiles at the podium after that Eagles game and act like everything was perfectly fine.
No. And I think you're right. That's the competitive spirit. Not only you want to see from your quarterback, that's what we've come to expect from Tom freaking Brady over the last 19 years. And, you know, he knows when the offense is clicking and he knows when there are warning signs. And that's what Sunday was to him. And a large part of this season in terms of their inability to convert in the red zone has been one big warning sign. And they've got to get it figured out in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely, Trags. I really appreciate you staying on with me for this long. These tend to drag. Some of our podcasts can be over an hour in time, so I appreciate you staying on and sticking it out with me.
My pleasure, Evan. I'm sure we're helping a lot of Patriots fans get through rush hour both to and from work.
That's the goal, and we'll be back on Patriots All 22 next week to break down the Houston Texans and Deshaun Watson, and a pretty darn good game that will be too. We'll also recap some of this Dallas game as well. But until then, signing off for Trags. I almost said Adam's name, but it's Trags this week. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.